Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Attention all small biz owners. At the UPS store, you can count on us to handle your packages with care. With our certified packing experts, your packages are properly packed and protected. And with our pack and ship guarantee, when we pack it and ship it, we guarantee it. Because your items arrive safe or you'll be reimbursed. Visit theupsstore.com/guarantee for full details. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. The UPS store. Be unstoppable. Come into your local store today.
You're trying.
Welcome to Properly Howard, a podcast that reviews classic films and other pulp fiction. Today we take a look at the Amish thriller, Witness. Starring Harrison Ford, Witness is a film about a detective who has to go into hiding to protect himself and a young Amish boy from evil Danny Glover. Also, a guy gets killed by corn. With me to discuss this, as always, is Dr. Anthony LaDon.
Look out for corn, man.
Yeah.
Corn will surprise you.
Yeah, this was really brought to you by the pro-gluten crowd. Like, hey, everybody, just so you guys know, corn's not the answer.
Steve, are you good at whacking?
I mean, I used to be really good.
Past your prime?
Yeah. I mean, I can whack. But I mean, I'm not like... I wouldn't put it in my bio.
I'm really curious to hear you talk about this movie. I this could go any number of ways. I really enjoy this movie. This is the kind of movie that I'm thinking, is Steve sitting watching this, just hating every moment of it?
Why would you say that?
I don't know. I mean, it's certainly not the kind of movie that I could see you just sitting down to enjoy by yourself.
No.
Unless you did want to do some whacking.
It's funny because I kind of always avoided this movie growing up.
Say more.
Mostly because my mom liked it. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't trust her film instincts. So I'm like, what could this even be about? You know, it's like, cause I just, it's an interesting like cover. It's just Harrison Ford. You know, it's like, that's all you need to know. Like, it's called Witness and the cover is just Harrison Ford's face. Essentially, like, he's not the witness.
Mm-hmm. No,
which is kind of feels a little misleading.
This is 85, right? So, Harrison Ford is enough to sell a movie. Like, what more do you need besides this blockbuster face?
Right. But it was filmed in 83, which I think is interesting. So what I don't know is if there was like a gap.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I'm always interested when something like takes a couple years to from filming.
Yeah.
To,
usually when those kinds of things happen, it's because someone had a conflict and they had to drop out or something like that. Or they had someone scheduled and then they decided to go a different direction. I don't know what ended up happening with this one, but I did note that even though it's an 85 release date, the world itself is set in 1984, which is kind of an odd move
right
for a movie to do. You know, usually if you want someone to know the exact date of a movie, it's either sort of the distant past or the distant future.
Right. It's interesting that it's just like, that was a few days ago.
Well, Harrison Ford's blockbuster face was enough to sell this movie, but not enough to get Star Wars loving, action figure owning Steve Osborne to revisit the movie because it had the stink of your mother on it.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like she liked it. So I'm like, I just thought it was, I'm like, oh, I think this movie's about Harrison Ford, you know, just falling in love with an Amish woman.
Well, that's kind of what it is.
Well, yeah.
That's definitely a major part of this movie.
Yeah.
What's not to like about that?
I mean, that's fine, but like, I mean, you didn't tell me they'd be shooting and throat slitting. Then I'm like, well, maybe young Steve would have been a little bit more apt.
So what about old Steve? How did you feel about this movie? Forced by me to watch it.
Hey, I mean, Turnabout's fair play. I like it.
Oh, good. I love it. I love that.
I mean, there are parts of it I don't. Mostly, I don't love the soundtrack.
I was going to talk to you about the soundtrack. It was so noticeable.
It's pervasive.
It's so pervasive and sort of in place of dialogue a lot of the time. A lot of this movie is sort of a long, slow, ponderous camera work. Made me think, like, this is kind of what Stranger Things is playing with at times.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
I'm sure that there were a lot of movies during this time that Stranger Things borrowed from. But this particular movie set in the, you know, this particular music overlaid against shots in the Midwest, it did kind of remind me of Stranger Things. So you didn't love the score?
Didn't love the score, and it was a bit distracting. not so much that it was like a problem, but it did, like, I think it did somewhat prevent me from getting maybe like fully engrossed in what was going on. I knew I knew the movie was about a witness.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, and Amish. It's a much more interesting movie than I would have thought. Because of how much time it spends in, you know, the Amish world.
It's funny because on rewatch, because I think I rewatched this last year or something, all of the scenes in Philadelphia, this movie has a lot more Philadelphia in it than I remembered.
Mm.
And I think the part that really sticks with you is the amount of time that he's, you know, raising a barn out in the middle of nowhere or whatever.
Right.
But there's a lot of the sort of gritty cop movie, you know, dirty cop kind of stuff happening in this movie.
Right. And then you got the Amish in the city. I would have liked to see a little more Amish in the city, like Crocodile Dundee or something.
This is one of these fish out of water stories.
Sure.
It's interesting because they do bring that. They do bring the Amish into the big city first and foremost. In fact, that's kind of the conceit of the movie, is that this boy witnesses a harrowing crime perpetrated by Danny Glover.
And he's just chilling. Like, I mean, he's really level-headed. He's not screaming or nothing. Man, being Amish hardens a man. You know, I mean, it really, you churn some butter as a kid and you can put up with a lot.
I like that the kid, like, he's never been in a bathroom stall before, probably.
Mm-hmm.
But he does the classic bathroom stall move, you know?
Yeah.
Go underneath the side wall and then stand up on the bowl. And that will usually thwart most villains.
Yeah, they won't double check.
I already looked
at that stall. I'm not going to spend the 4 seconds to look at
that's
it.
That's backtracking, and we don't backtrack.
Yeah. I'm just, this is, this, Also, I mean, that's where you got to kill him. Like, there's no other place to kill him. Like, well, I already checked the stalls. Like, so that's it. No one's going to walk in. No one's going to walk in when you're just like loudly slicing a guy's throat. I mean, it is Philadelphia. I get it.
So we were talking about my new theory of the difference between film detectives, the cannoli detective versus the donut detective. Mm-hmm. Does Harrison Ford strike you as fitting into one of these categories?
Oh, he's a hot dog detective.
I was going to say, do we need a new category?
I mean, I have in my notes, I could watch an entire movie of Harrison Ford eating a hot dog.
All right, so just to remind...
He went right to town on that hot dog.
Just pounding the hot dog.
Man, he just like, he just... That was a Joey Chestnut two-biter, man. It was crazy.
So these were the different categories of film detectives. The donut detective, loosely associated with Chicago. These guys wear suits. They're older. They're fatter. They're almost always Scottish or Irish descent. And they're very mustache-forward people. Whereas the cannoli detective, greasier, plain clothes, younger, could have been gangsters. Like, they're from the old neighborhood. Some of their friends are gangsters, and they decided to go into the cop. So I think if I had to place Harrison Ford in one of these categories, I'd probably go with the cannoli cop. He just happens to not be corrupt. But this is really a cannoli cop kind of movie, right?
Yeah, because of the primary thing is the corruption, right?
But he's wearing a suit, and eating a hot dog definitely puts him closer to donuts to me than cannolis. Or do we need an entirely new category?
Yeah, because I mean, by seeing him, like, he primarily was eating savory stuff in this one, so I think that that's maybe. Maybe there's a clue into a good cop is he's gonna get a slice, or he's gonna get a hot dog, he's gonna get something along those lines, you know.
According to his sister, he decided to be a cop because he thinks he's always right. He kind of has a low view of the rest of the police force, who can't, you know, distinguish criminals from a bag of elbows. And you know, he's got a gun. He feels like he's out on the street trying to make things right. Like, he's, in other words, he's more cowboy than he is street cop.
Well, he's more Amish.
Maybe deep down he's a little Amish, right? But I think a new category of hot dog cop for he's more American, sort of like classically American hero kind of guy, or at least that's how he views himself.
Yeah. In fact, I think he's uber American, and because it's an interesting, there's almost an element of the white savior motif, but it's in a white world. But it goes to the point of almost like an American, like a truly American savior to that degree.
That's interesting. So it is sort of a cross-cultural thing. You know, clearly these sort of cultures are clashing, right?
This is essentially just this is where Avatar came from.
You know, you kind of put him against the rest of the cops of Philadelphia, and he's almost wearing a white hat. You know, he's almost like a non-complicated, virtuous, heroic, old Western sheriff or something like that. And you take the same guy and you put him in the middle of Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and he just looks so much greasier, right? He's sort of the dirty outsider who sort of represents, you know, the worldliness and everything that, you know, you kind of, you don't want your children, you don't want your child to grow up and be like that guy. So it's an interesting fish out of water contrast.
Yeah, no, it's it's a very, I give the director a lot of credit in this, in the way I felt like it was a very deftly handled film, because I think it could have been real easy to maybe just really play up the juxtaposition of the worlds colliding, though. I think there was a certain care to it. It was interesting. It felt like he's respectful about it, you know what I mean? Like, it could have been easy to really make the John Book character just scoffing at all of this, like everything about it. But
and he does a little bit of that, right?
Well, a little bit. Well, sure, because I mean, it's a totally different environment. But I mean, you know, he feels remorse if because he kind of introduced the kid to a gun inadvertently, right? He's not fighting the issue. You know what I mean? He's very, I don't know. He is pretty respectful. And I think that's important for his character, because it feels consistent with this good cop, right? He fancies himself to be smarter than the rest, and he fancies himself to be, you know, just a better cop. So
yeah, he's smarter. He's more righteous.
Right.
He's usually right. You know, he's usually correct in his assessments of, you know, how to do police work. He makes sense as a good guy in his world. He absolutely makes zero sense as a good guy in their world.
Right. So I think it's interesting too, that they could have, they're much more like uneasy with him being there, mostly. And I don't know. I mean, part of it is because he represents the outside, but it's also just, it's just an outsider, you know. It's kind of really shows the sort of the inclusive nature of and the isolated nature of their life. I think it's just really carefully done. We're being brought into this world. I don't know how many Amish people saw this. I don't know how you would. But you have, we're supposed to be able to relate to the John Book character as we go into this Amish community. And I think if you make him too standoffish, or if you make him too rebellious, the two worlds seem like you're just watching two worlds. I think you need to go into this world feeling like you can somewhat relate to, or at least empathize with, John Book, so that you can go on this journey with him. And by him kind of being a little more polite and a little bit respectful, it sort of helps. It helps move this story along in a way that, like, you resist some like lazy tropey type stuff where if they're just at odds, then that's the movie, you know. And then at the end, everybody gets together and, you know, they break bread and they're a little bit more modern and he's a little bit more Amish and everybody's better for it, right? Like, that's a lot of times how these types of worlds colliding things play out, and it really didn't, you know. And I think that's a real, like I said, definitely directed to get to that, and so that way we can see this world and maybe have an appreciation for it, as opposed to just seeing it maybe as like, that's weird.
Okay, let me ask you this: is this movie better if they hook up at some point?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. Is this movie better if they live happily ever after?
No.
I don't think so either. This is sort of like almost like a Jane Austen kind of plot. It's like, I love you, you love me. It's just not going to work. Society, because of society, you and I will always kind of be star-crossed lovers.
What I like about it is that, and this is all kind of implied, right? And I think that's a lot of really what's really well done, is there's a lot of implied things as opposed to having it be exposition or explain how it works. Like, there's like, I felt like I got the idea that, like, not only is this not going to work, but one of us is going to have to compromise something that's kind of who they are, their identity, which, you know, fine, do that. However, that's going to put a burden on the other person. Because if she goes to the city, now he's got like, oh, yeah, I love you, but now I have to like teach you how to vacuum or whatever. You know, like it's just like, you know what I mean? It's like everything is going to be different for him. And it's like, that's, then that puts him in a different, either way, it changes the power dynamic, right? If he stays there, he's got to be only, brought along.
If only she could learn how to vacuum. They would have lived happily ever after.
Like, I didn't know how to do laundry till I was married. So I was Amish for Heather for a while. And that changed the power dynamic because it didn't make it. I didn't appear charming. I didn't appear like I was coming from an isolated world. She just thought I was maybe a little dumb and I was a baby. I'm not saying that's what Amish people are, but like that's like that changes the power dynamic if he's got to go through and like
sure. No, I think that the novelty. I think that the more obvious solution is he becomes Amish. Like he sees the error of the ways of the city, and he decides he's going to give it up and follow his heart. And
you could sell that. I think you could possibly sell that, especially given what he just had to go through. And like, hey, the job I have is, you know, it's a lot more corrupt than I even realized. It's dangerous. I mean, at some point, though, like, can he, the Harrison Ford, Alexander Goodenough, you know, dance off or whatever's going to end up having to happen for her hand is, that's a lot for him to have to take on. I like John Book and everything, but if it's a dance off, I'm going with Goodenough.
So I really enjoy the Eli Lapp character in this movie because I think he could read like Lithgow and Footloose, you know?
Sure.
He could be like, no, these are our ways. Our ways are right. We don't allow rock and roll in our community. Right.
Right.
He does do that a little bit. And you could almost say like in this, you know, this religious community is even more severe than and isolated and anti-cultural than the one in Footloose. But this guy's got a point, I think. Right. And because he is making some interesting points, it almost makes you think, I don't know who's right in this conversation. And I think that this kind of gets brought to the head with the two different gun talks that they give to the little boy. What's the kid's name again in this movie?
The
Samuel.
Yeah, Samuel.
So Samuel gets
Lucas Haas, who for some reason has to be in like every religious themed film or TV show.
What else was he in?
Well, he was in Leap of Faith.
Okay, which
and,
we're going
and
to?
And it was in Righteous Gemstones, the most recent season.
Oh, all right. I did not know that. He gets two gun talks. The first gun talk is, you know, that's a loaded gun. You should never mess with a loaded gun. Here, let's take out the bullets. You can admire it. You can even hold it while I'm here. But don't do it while I'm not here, right? That's right. The first gun talk he gets from the Philadelphia detective. The second gun talk he gets is from Eli. That thing was designed to kill people, and that is against our beliefs. We don't do that. And if you touch it with your hand, you will let it into your heart. It's almost sort of like an extreme view on, you know, see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I like that these are both characters that I empathize with. Neither one of these guys is presenting as sort of full-on bad guy. You definitely know, don't listen to that guy, right? I think that you could easily take both of these gun talks as that person meant well. That person makes sense in their culture. That's the right gun talk. I don't think that there's a right or wrong answer here.
Well, and I think too, why I liked what they did with the Eli character, like you said, I mean, he could have been more, you know, just fire and brimstone, thou shalt not, and leave it at that. But they give him a little nuance, and any of the like impatience or exasperation that like I would sense from him kind of goes along. It feels like, you know, when you're in the community and you're successfully isolating, you don't really have to have these conversations. There's not a gun that's going to show up. So you don't have to have the gun talk, you know? Mm-hmm. So there's kind of this, like, you get used to just everything kind of going well, and then you have to sort of, I really don't want to even have to do this. This is why I've isolated.
You're having conversations about buttons. You're not having conversations about guns.
Yeah. So it's like, I just didn't think I had to do this anymore or at all. And now I have to. And it's like, there's this, so I feel like there's an authentic exasperation, but not necessarily like, oh, how dare you? You know what I mean? It's like, this has entered their world. So it felt like, I said, there was a, obviously the cultures are at odds, but they weren't like battling each other per se. And there was a necessary quality to it. And I think people appreciated. So I didn't, you know, and so there's all these moments that could have really played up and they didn't. And I think that was really helpful. Like, again, the, what's his name in the movie? Daniel, obviously interested in Rachel, obviously, you know, body's not even cold, but on to the next one. And he's smitten and he's trying to do, like, this is like, you could just like, you get a glimpse of like what this culture, how it operates, right? Like,
oh, you're talking about the blonde guy who's horning in on Rachel.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And so it's like, but you don't get a sense necessarily that he's a bad guy. He's just kind of also a product of this environment, of this world, of this, you know, sort of male centric world, right? And
he makes sense in this particular culture. Why not him?
Right. And so, but like, we see him as sort of this adversary because we're rooting for John Book, and maybe this Rachel relationship is authentic, right? So we're rooting for that. But when Daniel's in there, it could have been so easy that like he had a best Daniel or he had to do something, and you know, like, you know, it doesn't happen, right? In fact, Daniel shows more restraint during the whole ice cream scenario, of which, you know, could be perceived as weakness or it could be perceived as strength, depending on which culture you're kind of wanting to get on board with. So like, there were so many elements where they could have done something else to really kind of pump up maybe our support of John Book, but they don't. And I think it's like even Daniel sort of accepts him during the barn raising. Like, there's this element of like, yeah, well, hey, you're not so bad. You can raise a barn. You're not worthless.
In a lesser movie, John Book and Daniel would have like a sawing competition or something,
right?
Or like a log rolling competition,
or there's a, like, they sabotage his hammer.
No. Right.
And so I was really, it was funny because I'm watching this movie kind of waiting for those moments and they didn't happen. So then I'm like finding myself even more like enjoying and being at peace with the story that they're telling. And so I liked that. I liked that quite a bit. But then they would also then cut to like, they're all having the meal and like, they're still kind of like making like little googly eyes at each other and like, okay, back to that tension's back, right? Like, it's not like, okay, well, he's fine, he could build a barn, therefore he's got our blessing. Like, that doesn't happen. So I like that too. And then the ending, I mean,
let's move on to the ending. There's a lot of making love with your eyes in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they are full on making love across the room with their eyes, you know, even to the point where it's like, man, everyone knows what you two are thinking. Right. So, it's a sexy movie, man.
It's pretty sexy. It's interesting, right? Because it's
Amish sexy.
It's yes, yeah. It's bordering on Mennonite erotica.
I love it when Daniel is walking to the barn raising with Harrison Ford, and he says, is your hole getting better yet? Yeah. Like, to call someone's gunshot wound a hole is so dismissive. It's, I know. It's like full on Amish shade. Like, none of us are walking around with holes like that, man.
Exactly. We only have the holes that God gave us. You city folk with your extra holes.
Really like that. The other thing I liked about this coming down to the end is that, you know, like we said, it's a very quiet, very ponderous movie. And then you've got this scene.
Let it go, Paul! Put the gun down, Book!
Let it go!
Put that gun down! Gun down! I'm fucking with you! Put that gun down!
Let me go!
I'm gonna blow my head off!
Put the fucking gun down!
You really fucked up now, you idiot!
Let it go!
Put that gun down, you stupid ass!
Let it go, Paul! The gun's down!
Put that gun down!
Okay, the gun's down!
Gun's down! It's down.
Yeah, that's a scene, man.
I mean, it's like explosive staccato yelling.
Well, it's wild that, like, instead of a big shootout necessarily, they just shout. They're both just disappointed in each other in such a way that they just lecturing each other.
It's happening like their words are machine gun fire.
Yeah.
I just laugh every single time. It's unintentionally funny. Like, there are there are intentionally funny moments in this film, but to me, it just is so incongruous with the rest of the film.
Right. Yeah. Tonally. But does it feel authentic?
I don't know, man. It's just too funny. Like, you just got to take it down just one notch in order for that to work, because this is supposed to be your climax to the film, and I'm just cracking up.
Well, it's an interesting climax, right? Because you do this, they try to shout each other to death. And then it just sort of gives up later, right? Because there's too many Amish people.
I think this is important. I think that this is a really important element if you're going to take pacifism seriously. Mm. If you want pacifism to work, you have to have a situation where the other person can experience shame. Mm. I really think at the end, Harrison Ford just shames him. He's like, what are you going to do? Are you going to shoot him? Are you going to shoot them? How is this going to end for you? And it's just a series of questions that really shames this guy. And it could be that, you know, he just sees the innocence in these people and he's not willing to sort of bring Philadelphia to Lancaster or right. something. But I think a lot of people misunderstand.
Well, he ran out of corn.
Well, death by corn is a really bad way to go. But I think that there's something important. This movie's saying something important about the pacifist lifestyle. If you view pacifism as like, well, you just get beat up, you just get menaced with ice cream.
Exactly. Weaponizing desserts.
If you just have to get bullied with ice cream cones every now and again, it kind of sucks to be a pacifist. Like, you want someone to get out of that buggy and just, you know, bust that guy's nose, right?
Right.
But as that scene tells you, like, okay, well, did it feel good? Because guess what? You just invited more violence.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
And as the audience member, you're thinking, yeah, like everyone in Lancaster, Pennsylvania should have one Ohio Amish in their crew to kind of be their goon, right?
Yeah, totally.
But as soon as that happens, all of a sudden they know, you know, they know where to find him. And now Danny Glover and his shotgun are coming to Amish town. So I think that this movie is very smart in the way it kind of portrays the virtues of pacifism, even if it shows its limitations.
Sure.
So anyway, the point I'm making is that, like, if it's going to work, someone's got to be able to feel ashamed. You know, this is sort of Martin Luther King's thing. Is like, if we can get white suburban America to feel a sense of shame about what's going on, then we can change things. I wonder, though, if we've kind of lost our ability to feel shame. In other words, I wonder if this movie could work today with sort of the way things are in our world.
You want to bring shame back?
A little bit. I think shame can be a useful tool You know, if it's between a gunfire and just yelling at someone till they feel ashamed of themselves, maybe the second is the better choice.
Hmm.
Do you think that this movie could work today? I don't think it would.
I might disagree. I mean, it's, I just watched it for the first time. And granted, I have older sensibilities.
Built a goat shed. So you probably was sort of like building an entire, you know, giant barn. That probably seemed like pornography to you.
Yeah, I'm Amish adjacent, at least the last couple of weeks. You know, so like there is an element where like when I'm out there, you know, when I'm out there doing my thing, I feel like I'm breaking urban. You know, like I'm out there.
That's your room springer.
That's my room springer, is putting shingles on a shed, and so I do. Yeah, I mean, I think I might make the argument that not only could it work, but I think it probably should be given a shot to work.
Interesting. Because now, maybe, you know, you would still have the culture clash. I mean, I imagine,
right? I don't know how much more modern Amish have become. I don't know if they have like smart buggies.
I'll tell you what, you know, living in this part of the world, there's lots of different iterations of Amish culture, but for the most part, they're still pretty suspicious of technology. But I was in Lancaster, Pennsylvania recently, and you would go by a coffee shop and there'd be a bunch of horse and buggies just parked outside of the coffee shop.
Hmm.
They don't have electricity at night, but of course they want nice coffee. You know, it's just a complex way to live your life, I guess.
Yeah. And so, I mean, cause I think the themes would hold, right? You still would have a culture clash. I think this movie could be made today. I just don't know if it would be made this way today.
All right. Let's say you do make this movie today. Who do you cast in the Harrison Ford part?
Do they have to be like smoldering and sexy?
For sure.
Probably a little bit. John Krasinski.
I'm not sure. I like bulked up John Krasinski.
Bulked up? He's not bulked up.
He look at him. He's bulked up.
But he's still got a sweet face.
You're right. He does. I don't know if he's not Harrison Ford good looking though.
Nobody's Harrison Ford good
looking. Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. You bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Is there a trope, a cliche, or a device that you like in this film?
I love pulling out shotguns.
The shotguns out of the trunk.
Yeah, it's just such a. There's something about, like, I get worried if I put like a bottle of wine in the trunk and I feel like it's just gonna jostle. The confidence of just cruising around with shotguns in your trunk is impressive.
I do like the I like any good police lineup.
Mm.
Like, I just want a movie with a police lineup. You know, you tell me if a movie has a police lineup in it, I'm probably going to like it. And of course, you know, these police lineups, do they ever work? Have they ever worked in any movie?
No, I don't know. I think there was like, I wrote another note, and maybe this just shows my culture clashes. When they're eating the hot dogs, like, I didn't know that the Amish children could so freely burp. Like, that was another reason.
Not only
like,
that, just praise, dude. This shows he has a good appetite.
Yeah. Yeah. So that sort of softened me. Like, immediately, I'm like, maybe I could be a little Amish. And I will say though, like that the scene where Samuel is like admiring the trophies, and then sees Danny Glover. That scene is incredible. It is so incredibly shot. The slight slow motion, the tension there, and just the way that Harrison Ford just very slowly and subtly takes his pointer finger and puts it away, is that's there's a couple of scenes in this movie where Peter Weir really like shows off, and I think that scene is for sure one of them. Like, I really liked how that was put together.
Yeah, it was a great scene, and my memory had it wrong. When I was watching the scene, I was thinking, okay, this is when Danny Glover walks in, and I was thinking, yeah, it's kind of, I don't know if that works. And then I realized that wasn't it at all. He doesn't walk in. He just happens to see the newspaper clipping.
And I immediately knew his the guy he was telling everything to was in on it.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And is it safe to say that the barn raising scene is to this movie as the volleyball scene is in Top Gun?
A lot of repressed sexuality happening.
Yeah, just the hammering and the sawing and just the drinking each other's lemonade. Come on, man.
There is some sensual lemonade drinking in this film.
Yeah, I mean, dude, Goodenough is like mouthing that glass, and then he hands it over, and Harrison Ford gladly drinks his lemonade and hands it right back, and he mouths again.
Even before that happens, I think that Harrison Ford is using the wood planer, and Rachel comes in and brings him a glass of lemonade, and he just gulps it. Like,
oh yeah, just pouring down his face. Lemonade just, is,
and she's looking at him like, I've never seen a man do that to a lemonade glass before.
That's a man. Like, so here's the thing, because they ain't from concentrate, dog. They're peeling and they are twisting and they are juicing. So that's a labor of love. And he just that was a moment where, like, he took the hard work for granted, showing that he's a city boy. But she also was just like, man, like, if he could do that with lemonade, where does it end? What else that mouth do?
What might he do with a glass of milk?
Yeah, no, boy.
Is there a tweak that you would make to this movie to improve it?
The sound, the score,
for sure. The score. One more time. It's just too much.
Let it go, Paul. Put the gun down. Put that gun down. Gun down. I'm fucking the one. Put that gun down. Let it go.
Fucking blow my head off.
Head off. The fucking gun. Let it go.
You really fucked up now, you idiot.
Let it go. Put that gun down. You stupid.
Let it go, Paul. The gun's down.
Put that gun down.
Okay, the gun's down. It's down.
And that's like listening to Kramer yell at Jerry.
I was gonna say, it reminded me of like Kramer doing a bit.
Yeah.
The
more you play that, the more I like it.
It's just too much, man. It's just way too much. You gotta take it down a notch. Is this movie better, worse, or on par with a Ron Howard movie?
You know, I was feeling pretty properly Howard.
Mm-hmm. I could see
for a good chunk of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I tend to lean that way, but I think I'm going to give it a Howard plus one.
Oh,
because I think Howard fully capable, but like there was a lot of resistance to some of those tropey and cliche elements, and the ending is so great.
Yeah. I was gonna say properly Howard. It's not really like, I can't really think of a Howard analog to this movie. Like, has he ever done a movie in like in a cornfield? Like, I feel like most of his movies are like,
I feel like he was born in a cornfield and then he was just,
yeah, maybe so. Corn will pop up where you least expect it.
Fair amount of time spent on the corn killing.
I mean, do you think Do you buy it? Do you buy that he's just going to sit there and let it rain down on him?
Look, man, until it happens to you.
I feel like I've watched this movie a number of times. It feels like at first it kind of choked him out. Like it was like,
yeah, because like clearly like it's, and I thought that was an interesting element too, is that he's like, it's a suffocating,
it like suffocates and disorients him first, and then right. It just completely sort of covers him.
I think if there had been a scene where like he's digging to get out, or like trying to get to the door, but it's like causing more, like it just keeps on piling in, like digging in the sand, maybe that would have maybe helped the scene a little bit. Because then it feels like there was like, if you have him panicking and trying to get out, as opposed to just like, ah, corn, I guess it'll stop though, right?
I like that it completely confounded Danny Glover.
Oh yeah, that's the thing I thought was, dude, those are little value added elements, because I think that would stop you, right? Like, what's going on there? Yeah, so there is an element of like, so, and I think that's important too, because they're out here, right? These are, you know, city cops kind of coming in, and I think they're probably just figuring, look, man, we just got to go into Amish country and bust some skulls if we have to. It's, yeah, Amish country. And so they are immediately kind of like, what do you do? You know? So I think there is a you know, the bell.
The bell ringing.
Like, I don't know. Well,
I was expecting a shotgun maybe.
Yeah, everything that's like, because I think you keep waiting for them to get the gun.
Yep.
Right. And that's what I think that's what the movie does really well, is you're waiting for them to get the gun. And just like a lot of other things that you're expecting to happen in this sort of culture clash movie don't happen. And I think I don't believe a lot of that's accidental. I think the director is intentionally subverting expectations.
Yeah, it would sort of be a typical Hollywood move to have the little boy get the gun.
Eli takes the shot, right? After having this big speech about what it means, but like in order to save a life, he had to take a life, and then that sort of complicates it, right? That's not even that bad of an idea. It's just that I think this is way better.
Just is a lot more effective just to ring that bell.
Yeah, and maybe that's what they're trying to tell you.
I don't know. I don't know if I have a good movie analogy to this from Howard's filmography. But it does feel to me like this is a good movie. I wouldn't call it a great movie, but I enjoy it every time I watch it. It's a movie that I think it works. It could easily work as a crime drama. It's like two parts staring at each other longingly and one part gritty crime drama.
Well, this was nominated for Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actor, won for Best Screenplay, nominated for Art Direction, Cinematography, won for Film Editing, and it was, get this, nominated for Best Original Score.
Interesting.
So this was, Golden Globes, Best Picture, Best Director, Best Screenplay, all these nominations.
So now I want to know what won Best Picture in 85.
That's a great question. Let's find out. It Out of Africa.
Not dissimilar.
So your Best Picture nominees were Out of Africa, The Color Purple, Kiss of the Spider Woman, Pritzi's Honor, and Witness.
So I'll tell you what, there's some strong similarities between this movie and Out of Africa. This movie's better. I don't know if you've revisited Out of Africa.
I have not revisited. It's been a long, long time.
It's not great. This is probably, of all of those, I don't think I ever saw Kiss of the Spider Woman.
Yeah, your Best Actor nominees were William Hurt, who won for Kiss of the Spider Woman, Harrison Ford, James Garner, Jack Nicholson, and John Voight.
James Garner?
Yeah, for Murphy's Romance.
I'm writing that down right now.
The Best Actor in a Supporting Role, the winner was Don Ameche from Cocoon. Speaking of.
So this was the Cocoon year.
This was the Cocoon year.
Huh. Interesting. And,
also nominated for Best Actor in a Supporting Role from Jagged Edge is Robert Loggia. any opportunity I get to say Robert Loggia, I do. So the best writing for a screenplay written directly for the screen, Witness, beat out Back to the Future, Brazil, The Official Story, and The Purple Rose of Cairo.
Huh. Which Kevin Bacon character could you insert into this movie to enhance it?
In this movie? Oh, I mean, I know I used it before, but I'll use the Beverly Hills Cop 3 bad cop. Throw him in the mix. He can die.
And dirty cop, for sure. Yeah. And I know that I've used him before, but again, this movie has a lot of similarities with Footloose. In fact,
he's the rebellious Amish kid.
He kind of is. And if you couldn't get Harrison Ford, I think that Kevin Bacon could actually work in this film.
I mean, he's much younger at that time.
But he's much younger, but he wouldn't be too young to play as sort of a younger beat cop or something like that.
Mm.
So I could see that. Steve, is there a half the battle, one of the grown moment in this film?
Don't leave the door ajar unless you do want someone to watch.
I'm going to say, if a beautiful woman gives you lemonade, just go to town.
Yeah. I mean, your instinct may be appreciate all the hard work, but if you're thirsty, drink.
If you're drinking so fast that a little bit dribbles down the chin, all the better.
Yeah, let it dribble.
Let it dribble.
So I think we talked about this ending, though. Like, I think it is important to, I mean, he just leaves, man.
Yeah, I think it has to end that way. It's like,
I do, too.
It's like,
I was really nervous about the ending, to be honest. Like, I was like, how does this wrap up?
Uh-huh.
And it's real good. You know, he's out there smoking, giving his, you know, report. You know, has a little talk with Samuel, and then the wave from Daniel as he's leaving.
Yeah.
That's also amazing, by the way, because it could have so easily been like, you know, I have a new respect for you, but there was an element of like, all right, get out of here. You know, and I thought that was so authentic.
Like, one guy's driving away, the other one's walking up the driveway, and just, it says everything you need to say.
Exactly. I'm gonna take ice cream to the face. You go out there and punch, you know, somebody in the street.
Yeah, it's fantastic, and you know, you get the sense that I feel a little bit sad for both of them. You know, it's like she got to see just a little glimpse into what the outside world's like. It's mostly bad, but there's some rock and roll music out there, man.
There's some rock and roll and some heavy petting. And
yeah. And he got to see what Amish life is like. And it's, you know, it's mostly repressive, but there's also some serious sponge baths happening over there. And they both decide, yeah, maybe in a different life. Glad you watched it.
And of course, because this was because Viggo Mortensen was cast in his first role.
Is that true?
Yeah, primarily because the casting director said he has an Amish face.
Huh. Interesting.
So he
was a little Amish. You're not sure whether he's playing with a full deck of cards.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, he doesn't really have a speaking role, so you don't know. But
right. Yeah, is he one of the guys on the farm that, you know, got kicked in the head by a mule and can still wield a hammer, but like,
don't have it on the kids. I like to think that he's got that backstory in his head.
Yeah.
To sort of help him take on the character.
Exactly. So yeah, because of that, now we're taking, you know, it, as part of our bacon wrap draft, now Viggo Mortensen was my choice. Taking us to Carlito's Way.
He plays a very different character. Now, how long is it between these films? Because I can't think it's that long between.
Oh, I think it's, well, it's, so Carlito's Way is 93.
Okay, so this is a full 8 years later. But this was, what do we think, it was shot in 83 or something?
Yeah, so it's about, yeah, so it's probably like a 10-year gap, yeah.
Gotcha. And eventually, of course, he's going to become Aragorn in Lord of the Rings.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, it's a pretty interesting trajectory.
So I was going to ask you, and I think I already got your answer. Is there a part of the sort of the Amish life that looks appealing to you? Like, is you watch this movie, you think, you know what? Maybe I could get into that. Maybe that
hats.
You like that?
Because remember when we went to pick out hats, they were really trying to get me to wear like a big brimmed hat. And
we both
agreed. I mean, like, despite, like, they were just insistent. I mean, they were probably trying to just move these hats, but like, they were insistent that I looked great in it. And I'm like, there's just, I had zero confidence in being able to pull that off. However, if forced to, and knowing that other people are wearing that hat, I think I would enjoy trying to pull off the hat.
So of course the answer is, neither one of us would survive like 2 minutes in Amish.
Oh God, no! Are you kidding me?
Getting up at 4:30 to milk.
No. We're not doing milk.
But you know, I could see Amish vacation. I could see that as a like living in an Amish community for a month, maybe even a summer. That would definitely scratch an itch.
I think maybe if they had like an Amish casino in Vegas, I'd go.
Amish themed.
Yeah, like you go in there and everything's candlelit, and then it's the old timey slot machines that are like, you know, you pull the lever, you know, yeah. I think I could do that. It's like an Amish burlesque show.
Amish burlesque is just you in the other room peeping into a sponge bath.
It's just a woman rolling up her sleeves a little.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply, in-app only.